Chapter 6. It was about 4:30, and the October sun was still high overhead when I stepped off the crowded bus onto Tanner Street. I'd been to the neighborhood a few times before. Widow had one of his Little League games with the police athletic league in a park just off Tanner Street last year. Ramirez was an assistant coach with the team. That's how he and my mother met. Widow played center field. Frankie and I had also been through this area in his car a few months ago when we were looking for Widow's killer. Frankie said he had a girlfriend that used to live not too far from the park. I remember the conversation because it was funny. This girl was so fine, Holmes. But she was bad news, too. She used to hide knives in her hair just in case, he'd said. I laughed because Frankie had no room to say anyone was trouble. He was the one with the gun hidden under his seat. She had to be trouble to put up with you, I said at the time. It's true. If I had a daughter, I'd never let her near me, he said. You neither, Holmes. You're a mess, he joked, gunning the Le Mans back home. Tanner Street was a lot like my old neighborhood, just a 15-minute bus ride from Frankie's house, about 40 minutes from Bluford High. The area was all Chicano. Small one-story stucco houses faced each other on both sides of the street, some with little gardens, a few with statues of La Virgen, the Virgin Mary. Many houses had iron bars on the windows, too, just like our old place. Leaving the bus stop, I spotted a mural on the side of a nearby garage. Increase the peace, it read in faded silver and black letters the size of a person's chest. Beneath the words, the artist added an image of a maroon lowrider cruising in the sun, chrome wheels sparkling like diamonds. Between the words and the car, two giant brown hands were painted as if they were coming together in a handshake. If you didn't know better, you'd think the neighborhood was safe, that peace was on the march. But more recent than the mural were the gang tags painted on the walls of the nearby buildings. One even covered a corner of the mural. An insult to the art and its message. I didn't recognize the name, but I knew it was a sign of who was in charge. Hector's house was up the street. My fingertips started tingling, and my palms got sweaty as I moved closer. If my mother knew where I was, she'd never let me out of the house again. And if she had any clue what I was doing, the tears would be flowing down her face in full force. If anything happens to you, it will kill me, mijo, she'd wail. Truth is, I didn't know what I was doing as I walked up the block. Dogs in houses on both sides of the street started barking at me. Brown kids with faces like mine stopped playing to look at me as I passed by. On a nearby porch, I saw an elderly couple watching me. They were all people who knew not to trust strangers walking in their neighborhood. But there I was. Chago's words were ringing in my ear. The dude in the middle gets hit from both sides. You can't survive that. But I couldn't stop myself. It was like I was possessed as I marched up the block and spotted the homies outside 2187 Tanner Street, Hector Maldonado's house. There were four guys standing next to a blue Ford pickup parked on the street. Another dude was behind the wheel, and other people were in front of the truck, though I couldn't tell how many because the hood was up. Holmes, you ain't never gonna get that thing to start, said one guy without a shirt. He had a beer in his hand and a tattoo of a spider's web on his right shoulder. I could see it from halfway down the block. He was my height, but bigger and more muscular. Man, give Caesar a chance. He fixed it last time. Yeah, but that was before... You know. Yo, why don't you shut up about that, man? Show some respect. Relax, Holmes. I'm just being real, that's all. No, you're being real stupid. I was close now, maybe about 10 yards away. If they weren't all looking at the truck, they would have noticed me walking right up the sidewalk. I still don't know what I was thinking or planning to do, just looking for answers, for proof, a reason. Maybe I was looking for something else too, an ending. I don't know. Try it now, a voice yelled from the front of the truck. The dude behind the wheel turned the key, and the old Ford came to life in a cloud of blue smoke that I could have hidden in if I were smarter or saner. I told you Caesar would get it working. Your brother still got his skills, Hector. That's 'cause I'm the one who taught him, came the response. My heart was racing as I stepped closer. I needed to see their faces if it was the last thing I ever did. I was just 10 feet away when I first heard footsteps behind me. Yo, homie, what you looking for? I hope it's a bus stop 'cause this ain't your hood. The whole crew surrounding the truck suddenly turned to face me. You know him, Hector? The dude behind me asked. Two guys came around from the front of the truck then. One of them, a stranger to me, was standing, wiping grease off his hands with a rag. The other appeared a second later in a wheelchair. I knew his face. In my head, I was at that party again. I was watching Frankie lean over a guy who was on the ground, hearing the thud of his boot as it slammed into the poor dude's stomach, dodging the foamy vomit as it poured onto the floor at our feet. The guy had looked up at me a second before the impact, burned his face forever in my mind. I'd seen it many times in nightmares since the fight, but it was never in a wheelchair, never with legs so thin and weak. "No, I don't know him," said Hector, the guy holding the rag. He stepped toward me. "You looking for trouble, Holmes?" My eyes were still locked to that wheelchair. I nearly went down right there in the street. "Please tell me it's not true," I told myself. But in my heart I knew it was. No one could have walked away from what Frankie did that night. Me, Chago, and the rest of the crew knew it, but we never said anything. Instead, we pushed it back, buried it. But some things can't be buried. For a second, I was frozen, paralyzed. The answers I searched for since Wedo's death came crashing through my skull like a gunshot. It started with Caesar and Frankie talking trash at the party. Then Frankie took it too far. He crippled Caesar with that kick. Hector wanted revenge. He came after Frankie and found him on my block. But Hector's aim was off, and bullets don't have names. They cut down anyone, everyone, even 8-year-olds who are in the wrong place at the wrong time. My legs suddenly felt weak. My stomach started churning. Before me were Weddle's killer and Frankie's victim. One boy dead, another in a wheelchair. And for what? I wanted to scream. For what? Respect? Revenge? That ain't nothing. Neither could fix Caesar's legs, bring Weddle back, or empty the graves of all the fallen kids lying in them now. The world was spinning, and I felt like it was about to fling me off like a piece of garbage. Another life lost in the barrio, just like my brother. Another world crumbled into dust. "Are you high, Holmes? You must have got some bad weed or something," the big guy said with a laugh. I don't like the looks of him. Is he packing? In an instant, hands were all over me, searching for a weapon I didn't have, one I knew I couldn't use even if I held it in my hands. "He don't even have any money. You know he's got to be using," someone said. I got shoved to the ground and landed on my backside in front of a group of guys who were my enemies but didn't know it. They were no different than my old crew, and one of them had suffered too, would suffer for the rest of his life from the looks of things. It was all too much. I felt like a blister about to pop. I had to get away, or I was going to lose it. But if I told them the truth about who I was, it would be the end of me. "I'm lost," I said to them. It was all I could say. "You damn right you lost. You're in the woods now, Holmes." "Man, I told you he's high, vato loco. Stay away from whatever he's smoking." 5-0, someone yelled then, and the crew backed away as a black and white police car pulled up next to us. "Again? That's the second one today," someone else added. I knew the reason. It was because of what I told Ramirez. I was sure of it. "Is there some kind of problem here?" I heard a different voice say, though from the ground I couldn't see much. Then a car door opened. "No problems, officer," the big dude said. "Hey, why don't you pick up our trash for us? The boy's as high as a kite." I looked up to see a white police officer, maybe in his early 30s, sizing me up like I was a crime scene. "You okay, son?" he said slowly, like I couldn't understand him. "I see your eyes are red. Have you been smoking something I should know about?" It was the same old deal with the cops in the barrio. Here they were in front of a killer and didn't know it. And here I was with my eyes red from tears, and I'm accused of using drugs. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The world is messed up. "I just need to get home," I said. "Let's take you to the station first," he said, helping me into the back of the police car. Funny how my first time in a cop car was the one time I hadn't done anything wrong. The crew watched as the cop pushed me into the back seat. Caesar had wheeled around close and studied me, his stare cutting me deeper than any blades. Tears rolled down my face as the car started moving. The questions that had haunted me for months suddenly had painful answers. "You sure you're okay, kid?" the officer asked, eyeing me in the rearview mirror. I shrugged and stared out the window. There was no way I could tell him what was going on inside me. The sudden twisting I felt deep in my bones, like I was an old rag and someone was wringing me out, wrenching me from the inside. "I don't know what you're hiding, but you're one lucky kid," the officer said. We've just increased patrol on this block this week. If you'd been here before today, no one would have found you. Yeah, I'm real lucky, I said, wiping my eyes. I knew my talk with Ramirez was the reason the patrols were at it, but I didn't say anything. The officer had probably saved me, but I didn't care. Sitting in the caged back seat of the police car, I didn't feel lucky or saved. I felt cursed. Hours passed before my mother finally arrived at the station. By then, she was so upset that she could barely look at me. I don't know what to do with you anymore, mijo. My manager at work is upset with me because I keep leaving work early. And if I miss another day, we're going to have trouble paying the bills. I keep praying, but I can't seem to get any answers, she said sadly as we walked into the apartment close to 10 p.m. Just seeing her made me ache inside, but I didn't have any words that would make her feel better. I didn't have any for myself. She wiped her eyes and shook her head. I was standing in front of my bedroom door. I hadn't told her or anyone what I saw. How could I explain that I felt like a bomb had blown out all that remained of me after Weddle's death? My mom started praying then, turning to the candles and the picture of Weddle. I closed my bedroom door, shut out the lights, and felt hot tears crawl down my face in the thick darkness.